I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Jillian Deakin joins me now, the former host of @discovery.ca and her own program on the CBC, The Jill Deakin Show, has a new book out, Green for Life, 200 Simple Eco Ideas for Every Day. It's a neat, useful book full of tips on how to live green. It doesn't make you crazy by altering your life a great deal. Rather, it suggests little things one can do daily, which taken all together can be most helpful to the environment and one's ecological footprint. There's a lot of stuff in here, from how to buy chocolate, to how to have sex, how to wash your car and do laundry, to how to prepare kids' lunches better, and more. Green for Life is published by Penguin and retails for $13.50. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Jill Deakin. Good morning, Ms. Deakin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Living green seems to cause a lot of trepidation in some people because it seems that it'll cost a great deal, that buying junk food, for example, is a lot cheaper than buying the alternative. Mm-hmm. But is it costly?
Well, I think it depends on how you measure cost. There's no question that buying an organic, broccoli and is going to cost you more it'll cost you a little more than buying a conventionally grown broccoli. And it'll certainly cost you more than a bag of potato chips or junk food or whatever you mentioned. But I guess the question is, as I say, how you measure the cost. The long-term cost to your health, and in fact, if you're eating a lot of junk food, it's not that long a term because the impacts are pretty immediate, have their own cost. And then I guess the other argument for when you're talking about organically grown food, for example, you don't see the costs of health care for workers who are spraying pesticides. You don't see the costs of the long-term effects on the soil and the crops and as I say, the farmers and things reflected on the price tag of that conventionally grown apple or broccoli or whatever. I think that's short-term thinking. You can say the same thing about buying a cheaper set of windows or when you're renovating your house, or a lot of things that are at the outset appear to be cheaper, and you end up paying either to replace them in the long run, or in the case of the efficiency of your home, you pay on a monthly basis for greater costs to heat your home and keep it cool in the summer. So I think that environmentally responsible choices, more sustainable choices, in some cases, although not all, and I have a lot of examples in my book that are actually cost-saving right off the bat. But in some cases, people are right to think that there's a greater upfront cost. But there is almost always, a payoff, whether it's because of health or because of reduced, and therefore, reduced costs associated with your medicines and your days off work and things like that. There's always a payoff down the road when you make the investment, the more sustainable investment up front.
Something you write about in the book that I never really thought about is the sort of cost, I don't know if the word cost is the right word, but the ecological footprint, say, of buying beef.
Mm-hmm.
That what do you write in the book about that? To raise, I guess, a pound of beef or something, it takes more than a pound of grain or something like that, or the land involved, the manpower, the energy.
That's right. Eating meat is definitely, eating less meat is a huge, hugely environmental choice. It takes 7 times the amount of agricultural land and resources, water and energy and whatnot, to produce a meat-based meal than it does to get the equivalent nutritional value from a plant-based meal. So that's kind of an easy visual for a lot of people. There's sort of 7 times the amount of energy and space and resources required to get, that calories of beef onto your plate compared with plant sources of that nutrition and protein. And then there are other costs, environmental costs of around meat when it comes to, you know, hormones and additives to the feed and the runoff into the water system and the kind of the trickle-down effect, again, a bigger picture scenario.
But where you're coming from in writing this book and offering us these tips is not to simply say, well, let's stop eating meat and let's go hug trees or anything like that, right?
No. No, I very much believe that the only way that the sustainability that we all need to start living by is ever going to take hold is if it's manageable and sort of viable for people. I don't eat meat myself, but I absolutely wouldn't expect that, and the world shouldn't and couldn't operate if nobody were eating meat. We probably wouldn't see any cows if there were any demand for them. I think people need to pay more attention to the choices that they make is really what I try to say in the book, and I give lots of clear and specific examples and sort of hand-holding of some of the things you can pay attention to and some of the alternative choices you can make. But my basic philosophy or argument, really, not a philosophy, is that we do need to give a bit more consideration to that trickle-down effect or the impact of our choices that we make, whether it's what we eat or how we get to where we're going or, and on and on and on.
What compelled you to write this book?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I've been living and trying to live in a more and more sustainable, environment-friendly way for, you know, really for a long time. As my awareness has grown over the years, so my choices and patterns have changed a little bit. And I mean, I've been a broadcaster and a journalist for a long time, so I've written sort of segments of these issues I've covered in magazine and print writing and on television before, because I think I guess what compels me is this: I'm fascinated by the gap that exists between people's desire to do the right thing and their ability to know what that might be. And, you know, there's been all kinds of polls and surveys done in Canada. You know, 93% of Canadians care about the environment, and 89% say they would do something to help, and 78% they'd say they'd pay more for a house, up to $20,000 more if it had green features. And, you know, there's all this goodwill and good intention on the part of Canadians, and I think people everywhere, especially in as prosperous and healthy a nation as Canada, we feel like we want to do the right thing for our own health and for the well-being of our future generations. But we are often stumped as to, okay, well, where do I start? And if I do, is this going to hurt? And is it going to cost me more, as you said in your first question? And what would it look like? And how on earth do I do it? You know, so I feel like I'm trying to leap into that gap and say, you know, demonstrate by example that it's not only possible, it's very rewarding, because this is how I'm like so many people in this country. I'm a parent, I've got a job, I've got a busy life, I've got a, you know, I could drive a car, we all have the same stuff that we're trying to grapple with and get through life with, and I've just learned and am learning more each day by my own experience of how to do it in a way that can save you money and can reduce your load on the planet. And I'm living proof that it's actually not really that hard. It's just about kind of knowing the tricks.
And the interesting thing about this book, and I think one of the appealing parts of it, is that it's not it's not preachy in the sense that you have to alter your life a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of car do you drive, Jill?
I drive a, it's called a Ford Escape Hybrid. So it's, as I, there's a chapter in the book called How to Buy a Car, and I talk about how I, my family, I have three children under the age of 10, and I my family and I spent a whole summer without a car last year. We spent 3 months because the lease ran out on our old car, and we were determined to figure out the absolute best choice that would fit our family and still be as light as possible on the earth. And it took some research and experimenting and whatnot till we figured it out. So that's what we came up with.
And in terms of cost, it's manageable for a family your size?
It's breathtaking how little gas we have to put in our hybrid car. It's the Ford Escape is the way we chose it, and this is what I tell people when they're thinking about how to buy a car. We, in addition to a whole bunch of other research, basically the simplest thing we did and the most helpful is we went onto the National Resources Canada website, and you do a search for the fuel efficiency listings of all the cars made in Canada or sold in Canada, all the new cars. And so we filtered that search by fuel efficiency, and we just went down the list until we, so the number one most efficient car in terms of mileage and you know, lowest emissions and best use of gas is the Toyota Prius. And the next best is the Honda Civic, which is also a hybrid like the Prius. And neither of those was big enough for our family. And then there were a whole bunch of tiny little cars, the Toyota Yaris and a couple of others, I forget. Anyway, and the first car we came to that was going to be big enough for two car seats and a almost beginning of teenagehood boy was the Ford Escape, and it was a hybrid. So it's got, it's very affordable in terms of the cost of keeping it running on gas. And then the other piece of it is that, which is, you know, a bit of a bigger and more philosophical aspect of greening your life, is that we choose not to drive it whenever we possibly can. You know, we live near public transit and we use it. We ride our bikes a lot. We walk to school. We, my husband bikes to work, you know. So we choose to use our car as little as possible, but we, you know, we still take hockey bags of hockey equipment to hockey practice and blah, blah, blah. We certainly use our car like a lot of people, but, yeah, it's a very affordable, great car. Are you happy with it?
A lot of people are worried about the price of fuel currently.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest in terms of, let's say you don't have a hybrid, you still have one of those regular cars. What sort of gas should you buy? Should one go for the premium or just the, I guess, the regular?
You know, that's, I'm not super sure how to answer that question, because I think from my understand my limited understanding of the combustion engine, I think it depends on the kind of car you have. I know some cars, they, I guess a lot of cars they recommend you should fill with the premium gasoline, and there's no question you pay a premium for it. But again, I know in some cases you pay more to fill that car with gas, but if you pay the cheaper gas, as we said earlier, you know, you're going to pay later for your engine repair because it's not going to run as efficiently or as smoothly, or something's going to go wrong because the contaminants or whatever's in there, it's going to bung up the engine, and so you, you know, you pay now or you pay later. But in terms of the, I think the best way for people to save money in this climate where fuel prices are, you know, on the rise and already really expensive, is to really take a close look at how much are you idling your engine. You know, that's a profound waste of gas right there. Zero efficiency to sit and idle your engine, never mind all the air pollution. How much are you driving when you could be either walking or riding a bike or taking public transit? I mean, that's, it sounds obvious, but it's, those are habits that we get into out of pure sort of routine. And if we just stop and examine them and go, you know what, there is that guy down the hall at my office who lives a couple blocks away. I suppose I could ask him for if he wants to carpool, or, you know, maybe I'll take public transit one day a week and see how terrible it is. And there's lots of opportunities to save on our monthly fuel costs for our cars if we re-examine how much we use them.
One of the great tips in the book that I found is how to unclog a drain. Could you tell us how to do that?
How to unclog a drain. Well, my experience has been, you want to talk about the drain or the toilet?
The drain where you put the baking soda and the
yeah,
vinegar.
Yeah, the baking soda, I just did this in my house a couple of weeks ago. You need a handful of baking soda and a handful of salt, and you can, I mean, I think in the book I give measurements. You don't, it sort of depends on what kind of, what size of drain you need to get it down and how far down the clog is. You may not be able to get a quarter of a cup of baking soda into the little drain. But anyways, you want to put in baking soda and salt in equal measure, roughly a handful, and just put them in slowly and at the same time so that they, so that you'll get the same amount in as the space gets filled up. And then you want to put the you want to put in some vinegar, just plain white vinegar, which is a great thing to have in sort of bulk quantity, as is baking soda, around the house, because it's also a fantastic cleaning product. I don't use any chemicals in my house for cleaning, and use vinegar with hot water on the floors and everything. So vinegar is a great thing to have around the house. So you pour in some straight white vinegar, and then immediately you'll notice the chemical reaction, and it starts to fizz. And you want to put the stopper on, so put the, if it's a kitchen sink, you know, put the stopper in, or if it's a bathroom sink, close the drain. And then leave it for 15 minutes or so, and as I say in the book, you know, check your phone messages or find some other good use for that precious quarter hour of your busy life. And then when about 15 minutes has passed, you want to, during which time you will have plugged in the kettle, you want to pour boiling water down the drain, because by then most of the fizzing will have subsided. You take the drain, the stopper out, and you pour boiling water in, and you'll see that your drain is cleared.
You mentioned that you clean with vinegar.
Yep.
Is that as effective as some of these antibacterial things that we see on the market today?
You know, all I can say to that is that your grandmother and my grandmother never heard of any of the ingredients that all those marketing campaigns have us believe are absolutely necessary for clean and health and hygiene in our homes. And they kept spanking clean houses without them. And my house, my kids, you know, touch wood, I have three boys, they're in the dirt and muck, and, you know, I have three kids who are as prone as any other to getting germs and getting, suffering if there were poor hygiene. And we clean our bathtub with baking soda and our floors and things with baking soda and vinegar and lemon juice and natural cleaning products. And my kids they're actually sick a lot less, like almost never, compared with a lot of their classmates and their peers. My house looks clean as a whistle, you know, for the 5 minutes that it can stay that way before somebody messes it up again. I absolutely believe that they, not only do they clean just as well, but they keep your lungs and your head clean. There's no sort of toxins that end up compromising your immune system in the long run. So I absolutely attest to how potent and effective those natural ingredients are.
Jill, what are you working on now, besides talking about this book? You're a columnist at Chatelaine, are you?
Yeah, I have a regular column with Chatelaine, which is also called Green for Life. Great magazine and great way to reach out to, a lot of Well, probably a lot of people like me who are parents and busy and but want to think about the choices that they make in their daily living and how to. So I just have a one-page article each month about some aspect of your life that you can green. I'm working on a couple of other projects with just in development with some ideas for CBC Radio and for some TV projects. And I'm working on some kind of I'm trying to develop an build up an idea for another book that my publisher is interested in another book, and I'm fascinated by, again, the gap between, I think Canadians feel an increasing awareness about eating locally grown foods. We all hear scares about imported foods, and we know that as the organic movement evolves, even that's not the best. If it just becomes a big, massive industry, even that's not really the environmental solution to eat an organic apple that's imported from New Zealand. You know, if we're supposed to be eating local, how do we do that as Canadians? It's pretty tricky for a lot of the year. So I'm kind of intrigued by that. I'm starting to live even more that way in my own cooking and eating. And so I'm quite interested in thinking more about that and possibly writing another book about that. And we're working on a few other ideas.
Yeah, we'll look forward to that second book. This is a very fine book, and congratulations on it, Jill. And
well,
thanks
thank
so much.
You.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
No, my pleasure. Thanks a lot for listening and sharing the ideas.
The book is called Green for Life: 200 Simple Eco Ideas for Every Day. Jill Deacon is its author. 1350 from Penguin. JillDeacon.ca is the website for more. For thecommentary.ca, I'm Joseph Plante.